Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. Want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. It'd be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in, Shangelo.
That would be really weird. I don't even know what that means.
I mean, I have nothing
to quip with that.
Shangelo is an unincorporated community in Smith County.
Okay.
Founded in the 1860s and named after Shangelo Creek.
Could we get some watermelons around those parts?
Shangelo is a name derived from the Choctaw language, meaning cypress tree.
That makes sense.
There we go.
We have a lot of Indian influence in this state, for sure.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
I literally live in Choctaw County.
I know. Wherever you are in our...
And you live in Octibahaw.
I do. So wherever you are, and I'm going to Neshoba County today.
So yes.
There you go.
Where are you headed to?
Pearl River Resort. We got our remote there.
Well, actually, you're going to Choctaw, Mississippi. I mean, it is Neshoba, but you're literally going to be in Choctaw, Mississippi on Indian grounds.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully you can see my friend Chief Ben today. I don't know.
We cannot escape it, and we love it.
We do love it. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away at strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. The Mississippi Beef Council wants to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. I keep thinking back to the rumblings question we got yesterday about keep eating American beef. I mean, might as well tell me keep breathing, Chief. I'll never stop. I love a burger. I love a steak. And Robbie and I are going to go eat a steak very soon.
Yes.
We're excited about that. We decided we need to go have a steak.
One of the best steaks around, too.
We are. We're not going to go too far. Well, we hadn't decided that we might travel a little bit. We don't know yet.
We could
do that. Well, we'll figure that out. But that's the great thing about living in Mississippi is I got a lot of options. If I want a great steak, I can go anywhere and get one. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you are looking for. Guys, don't wake up next Sunday and be without a gift for mom. Don't do it. If mom is a bulldog, go to College Corner and get her a great new gift. Everything maroon and white under one roof, all the logos that you want, stuff for the house, for the tailgate, whatever mom wants, it's right there at College Corner. Two locations in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online, collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler, Starkville's flagship restaurant for lunch, dinner, or Sunday brunch. The best meal in town always going to be at Restaurant Tyler. When you want to enjoy a fantastic meal at any time, you can do it in Starkville at Restaurant Tyler. Lunch, dinner. For dinner, it's just the best in town. Great steaks, great pasta dishes, chicken, vegetarian options. My favorite appetizer in the city, I think, the crawfish dip, although the barbecue okra is not far behind. And, of course, nothing finishes a meal off better than the Restaurant Tyler stuffed pancake. It's the stuff of legend. You need to go get you one next time you're here. You want to have a fantastic meal, the place to go is Restaurant Tyler. Priority One Bank, 16 locations here to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide and show you not only how they're going to help you invest and manage your money, but they're going to show you how they're help you prepare for the future. Now more than ever, when you have questions about your money, you need answers. You need to deal with Priority One Bank. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. So last night, Robbie and I were at Duty Noble Field. I don't know. First of all, I have some breaking news, Robbie, about this coaching search. Stuff that even you, with all your connections, don't have. You ready?
Yeah.
You learned something today, Chief? I'm leaving the parking lot, I see Zach Selman. I roll down my window. I'm like, hey, Zach, I'm going to be on tomorrow with Peter Burns and Chris Doering on SiriusXM. you got anything to tell me, you want to let me know who the coach is going to be so I can just go ahead and break that news. That'd be great. He looked at me and goes, it's you. So I am the new head coach.
You're the new coach?
Robbie, I've never played competitive baseball before. I'm going to have to get a good staff. But don't worry about the recruiting part of it. We're going to get players. But I got the job, evidently. I didn't even know I was
a candidate. That kind of sounded like a, oh, you think you can coach, so we might as well hire you.
Let's do it.
Zach's sly. Yeah. Zach is a sly man.
You know what? I'm going to get a raise out of it one way or the other. He did say he wanted to pay me only in catfish, but I could maybe open a restaurant.
How about
I got free supply?
Speaking of that, how about I was at I was at the game yesterday. The guy that was at the concession stand that we usually go to, the pop up whatever concession stand where you go get your own, he was wearing a Superior Catfish hat.
Everywhere
it was a super nice kid. He was super accommodating for me.
You're drinking out of your Superior Catfish cup. I just saw it.
I'm always repping.
We are always repping. All right.
Forever.
On a more serious note now. Mississippi State, the game is not the story. State dominates Memphis. I think you and I would both agree that maybe it's one of those things, Robbie, that the eyes just see what they want to see sometimes. But I did think State's approach at the plate was better last night. They dominated the game from start to finish. They put up big innings. You know, they the later innings of relief weren't great, but I mean, when you're up 10, 11 runs, who cares? And they make it an easy win over Memphis. That's not really the story. The story, obviously, is Justin Parker's first game in charge. Before Robbie and I talk about it, we don't normally do this, but I really want you guys to hear this audio if you haven't had a chance. And if you're watching on YouTube, you'll have the video here. This is from Robbie Faulk on 3 Sports. We'll give him full credit here. This is the post-game press conference with Justin Parker. And I want you guys to see and maybe get a better feel for the new skipper of the Diamond Dogs for at least the next couple of weeks. So here's that press conference now.
Well, Coach, a little different position for you today, kind of taking on a little bit of everything. What was it like out there, and what's the last 24 hours been like for you, just trying to keep everything normal, I guess, for the team, things like that, and what was the game like tonight?
Sure. Well, once the game started, it was great. You know, the last 24 hours, obviously, have been a whirlwind and very emotional for our guys. And, you know, but with that being said, it just was back to business when the game started. So that piece of it was nice. I know everyone was looking forward to it, and it was just really nice to be back on the field.
Steve?
Along those lines, what was kind of your first message to the team, and as they went out there today, just kind of getting back to normal? How did you make it more normal for them?
Sure. Well, they all showed up today. That's what I told them. I mean, that's what life is going to be like for the rest of their lives. I mean, there's going to be hard days. You're going to be tired. You're going to be beat up. You're going to hate your job. You're going to love your job. Whatever it is, you have to show up. And that's what it's about, and getting back to work and getting refocused and recommitted. And, they weren't going to cancel any games. They were going to cancel the rest of the season. Our mission is still ahead of us, and we have full control of our destiny. And that was our message to the guys today.
Doug?
Coach, I'm not going to ask you about your undefeated record so far, but it's been a week of change. Can you kind of take us through maybe how you guys have mixed your responsibilities around to handle that?
Well, it's been about 30 hours of change, and really we haven't done a whole lot different. A few minor things. We added Bobby Austin to our coaching responsibility list. He coached first base tonight. Maybe you saw that. But really, other than that, it's kind of status quo for the most part. We have good players. We have good coaches. Their vision is good. Their message has been good. I felt like consistency in that regard, just from what we're doing preparation-wise, I felt like that was important. I think the guys kind of got a breath of fresh air tonight and went out and played really free and easy and played really well.
Sam?
Just with the struggles that the team has had since start conference play, so what do you think is kind of missing, or what do you think will be key to kind of finish the season on a strong note?
You know, I think confidence is very important, and preparation leads to confidence, and confidence leads to success, and success leads to more confidence, and I think that's cyclical. And I think playing like we did tonight is a good first step in the right direction with that.
And obviously, you're going to be a little bit short-staffed the rest of the way. So how do you personally balance maintaining your duties as pitching coach with also just being the manager and overseeing sort of the whole operation with the position player group?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure yet. you know, tonight was a little bit of a trial run. I spent as much time as I could pregame with you know, of course, today was Pico's bullpen day. You know, I had a message for the team. I will be more involved in just hanging out with the other group, with the position player group. But you know, I plan on splitting a little bit more and using the resources a little bit more, where normally I'm you know, very locked in on the pitching only. So kind of a work in progress.
Steve?
This game was a 5-3 game at Memphis, and it was kind of herky-jerky, but tonight there was really no doubt who was going to win this ball game. It seemed like the team really came out focused and was very intentional. Had Sawyer and Hunter Hines both going the other way. Yeah. What do you kind of attribute that to, and maybe the big start to tonight?
Well, I mean, I think you're crazy, you know, if you're one of those players and you're sitting here through what's happened to them and you don't sit up a little straighter and you don't stiffen your spine a little bit. And you know, I think, you know, everyone here was on full attention. And, you know, I think we did a great job in the first of kind of taking the edge off by scoring three runs with two outs. And I think everyone settled in, breathed, and played good baseball from there.
Robbie?
You look at this weekend, obviously big crowds probably expected, big weekend too. The margin's relatively thin, but you still have a chance to do some big things the rest of the season. I mean, what's the message to the team coming into this weekend against Kentucky?
We just got to play good baseball. I mean, the bottom line is we're in the position that we're in because of a lot of what we've done. We got to play good baseball in all three phases. We got to pitch, throw strikes. We got to defend at a high level. We got to play smart. We got to hit and do all those things at the same time. You know, really. So tonight was a good step in the right direction.
Sam,
I know it's only been 30 hours or so, but have you given any thought into whether or not you'd want to be considered for the full-time head coach?
I mean, it's obviously a destination job here. I mean, this is the best ballpark, the best fan base in college baseball. So while my thoughts have mostly been on our guys and our families, you know, it certainly is quite the honor and quite the opportunity.
Steve?
Along those lines, too, like, kind of when did you know, what was those conversations like with Zach Selman about it? You're going to be the interim coach, and what were the expectations maybe he conveyed to you?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday, just after lunch, right before we had a short workout, he communicated the vision moving forward, and, you know, like I said before to our players, it was time for me to go to work today. That's what he called on us to do yesterday, and that's what we did today. So that's pretty much how it happened.
Got time for a couple more. Robbie?
Looking at Kentucky, what's kind of your impressions on what they bring offensively, their pitching staff, things like that? I mean, what's really impressed you about them?
Well, I haven't dug into them a ton this year other than watching in passing. We didn't play them last year, but just in passing, you know they're going to play high tempo. You know they're going to run. You know they're going to do the short game. They're going to exploit a lot of your weaknesses defensively. I haven't dug into the lineup yet or anything. They always throw strikes. Their pitching coach is a friend of mine, I highly respect him and what he does, and we're going to have our hands full. We're going to have to play good baseball. You know, it's going to be a more taxing weekend from a tactical standpoint. We're going to have to really defend and defend the short game. I think we'll spend a lot of time the rest of this week working on short game and run game and make sure we're buttoned up there. But it's a little bit unique from an SEC style standpoint.
We'll take two more questions. Danny B, wrap it up with Steve.
Coach, when you're working with the pitchers, I was curious about Evan Sierra's development. How much since you put him in starting rotation? Just how much has he improved? Obviously, he got his first win on the weekend.
Well, you know, the thing that he's been for us since he's been here is just super stable. You know, he's a competitor, he's a strike thrower, and he's very reliable. But you know, this year he's added a slower curveball to the mix, and I think it's changed things for him as far as layering pitches and pitch planning. And you know, he's had a lot of success with that. So he's grown tremendously. I think he's building confidence every week to go out against the offenses that he's doing going against and having the success that he is. And but I think a lot of it is just in his arsenal growth and how many more ways he has to attack hitters.
Steve?
You mentioned showing up, going to work every day. You got first game of an 8-game homestand tonight. What do you need from this Mississippi State fan base to kind of help propel you guys potentially into the postseason?
Well, I mean, I got the goosebumps tonight, you know, just watching our team for the first time without Coach Lemonis break down in shallow left field. That was a player-led meeting out there where it's usually Coach Lemonis leading it. And I kind of was in the dugout just watching and got goosebumps when they broke that huddle, watching our fan base come to its feet. That's the kind of passion that we need. You know, these kids are wonderful kids. They work incredibly hard. They feel responsible for the position that we're in, and nobody's going to play harder this next month than they will. I can assure you that.
Thank you.
This is a man that's been thrust into a tough situation. You know, obviously, he liked Chris Lemonis. Those are Chris Lemonis' players. But I found one thing I found kind of interesting was the comment he says about played with a breath of fresh air. I think the team, I think something we underrate sometimes is, you know, they talk about we don't hear the outside noise, but they do, right? They're not dumb. They know they aren't winning enough games. They know Chris Lemonis' job was in danger. Now that that's said and done, maybe that can be something that gets this team playing a little looser and playing better baseball.
No doubt. I think that's something that the people that we talked about earlier this week that were very critical of the decision of Zach Settleman, I think that's something that they just don't understand or not thinking about in this situation is this is an opportunity for Mississippi State to finish strong going into the offseason. They still got a chance to make a run here. And on one hand, Zach Settleman, he doesn't want Mississippi State to make a run with Chris Lemonis, as bad as that sounds, but he's ready for a new direction, and it would not be great for, you know, that whole situation if Mississippi State made a run, got into a super regional or whatever. I mean, it'd be very difficult to fire Chris Lemonis at that point. And I think that this had kind of run its course, and Zach Selman knew that there needed to be a new direction. At the same time, I think Zach Selman sees that there is an opportunity to make a run. I think that's part of the deal. I think part of the situation is a lot of times we've seen it here at Mississippi State. You make a coaching change and something happens within that team that creates more unity. They play a little more loose. It's kind of us against the world mentality. We've seen that so many times in sports. I mean, with Zach Arnett a couple of years ago, they got absolutely destroyed by Texas A&M. They looked lifeless. And the next day, he makes a coaching change, Zach Selman. And that next week, you play Southern Miss. I think it was kind of a slow start, but you could see the team kind of rally a little bit there late. And then they played, I thought, spirited against Ole Miss, although they just were not
good.
Yeah. But that team was playing different in those two ball games than it did the rest of the regular season. I think what we saw last night is a team that was a little bit angry. They were a little bit upset about this whole situation. They were playing more loose. I thought almost every at-bat that we saw in that game was a good quality at-bat, good approach. We did
Hunter
see some
Hines went the other way for base hits twice. Don't see that very
Hunter
often.
Hines had two base hits the other way and three walks.
Yeah.
Every plate appearance he had was fantastic.
That is not a typical Hunter Hines line at the Bell Yard.
Ross Highfield, another guy that's drawn criticism this year, I thought played an exceptional game. I thought he had really good at-bats, hit a three-run home run. Reed Stallman was really good. Ace Reese, obviously. They had bunts for hits. Mm-hmm. They were aggressive. This was a team that looked like they had nothing to lose, and the result was an 18-5 win. Now, the last two pitchers, Jacob Pruitt and Duke Stone, wasn't great, but they got through it. Neither of those guys have been pitching meaningful innings for Mississippi State anyway, so we'll see what happens with the bullpen and all that. I thought Noah Sullivan pitched extremely well to start the game. But if that's what we see the rest of the way, if that's the team that we see, not necessarily 18-5 every game, but a team that's playing with nothing to lose, playing loose, playing with that edge to them, having those great at-bats, bearing down and making plays out there defensively and on the mound. If that's the team we see, this is a team that's capable of making a run in these last 3 weeks. So I think, you know, at first I was kind of not really shocked, but I thought that if this ever happened, Jake Gautreaux would be the guy to take over as the interim.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Selman has seen something in Justin Parker to give him the reins. And you've talked to him before. I think we've talked to him maybe once in a media setting. You've talked to him a couple of times on this podcast.
Yeah.
He is a very, very good interview and very to the point and not very coach speaky. And I don't know if that's a because he hasn't been in that position yet and he doesn't know any better, or if that's just who he is.
Yeah, it's possible. He just hasn't been tainted yet.
Yeah, I mean, eventually he might turn into that. I don't know. But very refreshing interview that we had with him. And one of the things that I thought was the most refreshing, and I don't know, right now I would not consider him a prime candidate for this job,
mm-hmm.
but he was asked about that and yeah. whether or not he was interested. And right away, he said, this is a destination job.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity for myself and for our players. He didn't shy away from that.
Right.
He straight up told us that, yes, this is a, he didn't say it in these words, but this is a job interview for me.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity for me to show that I can lead a program. I can take over a program that was really struggling, lead them to the postseason, and I can run this program. I want to be here. This is a special place. This is a place that I could see myself coaching, being here long term. And he straight up came out and yeah. said it for the most part, and with Zach Selman sitting right behind us.
And I think we both agree that he's highly, 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 highly unlikely to get that job. But that doesn't mean that he can't make a statement now to get another job, that he couldn't.
Right.
If the new coach comes in and he's not interested in keeping him on staff, or if another school sees Justin Parker in these next few weeks and goes, that's a guy who could lead our program. You know, when you're talking about as a job interview, because I think fans are going to hear that and go, wait a minute, you think he's I don't think he's a candidate for this job. I don't.
Not right now.
No.
But that's not to say that he can't play himself into it.
He would have to do a lot.
He'd have to sell. He'd have to sell himself really well to Zach Selman.
Well, I think I would
definitely look around first.
Yeah, I think you and I would agree that we would feel a lot better about a Parker tenure than we did about a Henderson tenure back in 2018.
Yes, I think Henderson was kind of aged out at this point.
Yeah.
As a head coach, I don't think that would have excited anybody. But Justin Parker, I think, is kind of a rising coach as an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the right move for Mississippi State right now, but we'll see how it plays out. I do think that he is going to be an option. I don't think that Zach Selman has ruled that out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of the deal, is like, hey, let's see what he has, and I'll look around, and we'll come back and see what this looks like. I don't think that it's a situation – like Gary Henderson, where that was absolutely not a audition for him with John Cohen. And John Cohen knew Gary Henderson better than anybody, because that was his pitching coach and that was his successor at Kentucky. And he was a big reason why he came to Mississippi State in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So John Cohen had every right to hire him as a head coach. He knew all about him, and he said he's not the guy for the job. I think Zach Selman will have that same opportunity. I don't know if Justin Parker is, but all I'm saying is I think for this moment, State has the right person leading them. I think Justin Parker is the right guy to finish this season out.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens from there. I mean, ideally, you find a great coach here,
mm-hmm.
and maybe Justin Parker is your pitching coach moving forward.
That'd be fantastic. I
keep the familiarity
in him as a pitching coach.
We know what he can do. I know that things are not great right now with the pitching staff, but I have every reason to believe he's going to be able to put together a nice pitching staff moving forward. I like the pieces that he's added in the future classes. But all that to say, I thought that interview was really impressive by Justin Parker. I thought he handled himself the right way. And he didn't shy away from the fact that, you know, this has been a difficult past 48 hours.
Yeah.
This has been tough for them. He lost a friend. He lost a boss. The players lost their coach. This is something that is this is very difficult for them as a team, but they're getting through it. And he told him, this is going to be tough, but we're going to get through this. We're going to get through it by being there and showing up every single day. That's our job. We've been tasked to do that. Let's do it.
I agree. You can't make any predictions for Mississippi State over the next few weeks. You just can't. And we'll have to see what happens there. So let's move into the rest of the show that's brought to you by our friends over at Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District, the place to find the smoked Southern soul food. The Cotton District is going to be buzzing this weekend. It's Super Bulldog. It's the Starkville Derby. If you got a chance to get over to Two Brothers or to the older brother, go grab yourself a fantastic meal there. I can't wait for the Starkville Derby. It's going to be awesome. Love seeing all those people in the Cotton District and love seeing Two Brothers packed to the gills with people enjoying some fantastic smoked Southern soul food. Have you gotten your VIP stuff yet?
No, nobody's reached out to me.
What's all done?
I've been completely shut out of this entire process.
Stop your whining. Stop your whining.
Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me.
This guy.
I'm just going to bury myself under a rock.
All right. Well, before you do that, go to your Two Brothers.
I was on, first of all, Two Brothers, I was scrolling a while ago and I saw they posted a picture of a wing.
Yeah.
And was very hungry looking at it. And in the background, kind of blurred out, were the pimento cheese fritters.
We enjoyed those last time.
We had the other day. And I feel like we don't talk about those enough.
Yeah.
You ate part of mine.
Yes, I didn't realize.
You pulled a Bob Karskadi.
I didn't need to. I did not mean to do that.
I'd bitten into this. I put it back on the skillet.
Yeah.
And Brian just puts his fork in there or hand, I don't know, grabs it. I look down, it's missing. I was like, where's my fritter? You'd eaten it.
But you got the same number of fritters.
I did. And you did, and split. In fairness, you paid for it. I didn't need any of them.
That's right. Yeah. They didn't split that?
No. You said you would
take
care of it.
Oh, I did? Okay, then, yeah, yeah. Okay, it's fine.
You said you'd take care of it.
My bad.
Now you're going back.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to do that. No.
Oh, and by the way, I was on with Bart Heiss this morning.
Yeah.
On radio.
My broadcast cohort.
Yeah, he asked me for tips for dealing with you, and I said, just pull the cord out. Just don't let him know he's not plugged in.
No, I'll just be talking. Yeah, nobody will hear
Between
it.
Between you and Bo, we just need to pull both of those cords out and
I
just
think
let
I
Bart
should go
handle.
Full Jerry the King Lawler. I should be a heel. I should talk about how great cats are.
You really should. That would be,
he's
that would be
these
excellent.
Dogs. My cats would take these dogs out.
And I hope you do that so Alden can see what monster he's created here.
Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise it to you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems. They've been doing it for 50 years. One more time. There you go.
Brother.
When you are looking for business technology, if you need a new copier or a new printer in your office, new computers, new laptops, call our friends at Advantage Business Systems. They'll take care of you with a great product, but more importantly than that, if you need service, man, I can't tell you how many times my laptops have gone down here at SuperTalk, and every time I'm just like, why don't we buy from Advantage Business Systems? They would take care of this a lot sooner. Every time the scenario I lay out in the commercial happens to me every time. Happens to me every time. I have to call some 1-800 number. I got to talk to somebody who doesn't know who the hell I am. I got to wait a week for somebody to show. It's a pain. Somebody's at SuperTalk listening. Help me out. So call Advantage Business Systems, 601-362-9192, or visit them online, absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business System will help your business do business. If you're in Starkville this weekend, before you head over to Diddy Noble or Noose Park, you need to head over to Byrne & Co. Get yourself some new gear. Get yourself the M/S, the State Script, the interlocking MSU. Get something for your tailgate, for your home. Get something for mom. It's all right there at Maroon & Co. And use our promo code. Mom loves savings. So save 15% or more with our code THUNDER15 that you can use in the store or online at maroonandco.com. Before you go to the next game in Starkville, make sure you go to Maroon & Co. All right, we got a spring football preview to get to. We got the last one. And for tomorrow, Friday on the podcast feed, it'll be 15 interviews. So about 2 hours worth of college football if you want to listen to it. But of every team other than Mississippi State. No Mississippi State preview. If you want that, there's always this podcast.
We're going to be talking about Mississippi State for the next however many years we're alive.
Until they put me in the ground.
That's right.
So, let's finish it up. Joey Dwyer joins us, covers the Vanderbilt Commodores for Vandy Mania. That was their rival site. I don't know what it is now. But when I did the interview, I didn't know. Shannon had not alerted me to this merger that y'all were putting together. But yeah. Let's get his thoughts now on the Commodores. And I had a question for him that I'm going to ask you when we come back. We're starting to wrap up all of our spring previews. We are at Vanderbilt at this point. Joey Dwyer joins us from Vandy 24/7 now. We'll start with kind of a softball question, but is Diego Pavia the most popular player in college football?
I mean, he's more than any other Vanderbilt player has been over the last couple of years, or even at any time in program history, he's popular. And I think that's something that they've tried to hang their hat on. They've tried to take advantage of that. He's been a big recruiter for them. He's been the face of everything they do. They've done a nice job marketing him and kind of putting him everywhere. So I don't think it's super far-fetched to say that he's one of the most popular players in the country, but I think Vanderbilt knows that it's not going to have a whole lot of guys like him throughout its history, and it's really come out of nowhere. I mean, they didn't even know for sure that he'd be the starter heading into the fall last year, and now his legend has taken on a life of its own. It's amazing what a couple months can do.
So that being said, you know, he won some big games last year, but I wouldn't necessarily say that he was a great quarterback last year. You know, stats are just kind of pedestrian. He just has that whatever the unknown, the intangible thing going for him. Can he be a better passer this year? Can he be a more effective quarterback for Vanderbilt?
He definitely can be a more effective quarterback. And first of all, they need better receivers. They need better line play. And the receiver question is still a huge thing around Vanderbilt's program. I think they actually got worse at receiver, and they're going to have to address that in the spring portal. They've got a couple guys visiting, but they've got to get a game changer there if they want to do anything. Eli Stowers coming back really helps them, and I think the offensive line did get better. They got 5 transfers there, and I think all of them are going to be able to contribute in some form or fashion. But, yeah, you're right. Diego Pavia has to be better, and it's funny to say that considering how much success he led them to last year. But, like you said, the passing numbers aren't gaudy, and I think the running numbers gradually got worse throughout the year just as a result of his health, and they've got to find a way to keep him healthier. But also, he is kind of what he is in terms of his game, and he's not really going to back off guys. He's not really going to pull up when he knows he can get hit. Diego Pavia is, by all accounts, the guy who's going to embrace the hit and is going to try to get an extra yard or two on the play, which is great in theory, but also being healthy has got to be a priority for them. They've got a backup battle right now. I think it's going to be Blaise Berlowitz, but right now, Diego Pavia certainly has some room to improve, and he didn't practice a lot in the spring, kind of in the hopes that he would stay healthy and become healthier throughout the spring. So I think that's number one on the checklist. And then more so than anything, he could improve in his game, which I think he has improvements, but I thought he was pretty accurate for the most part. I thought he made good decisions with the ball, and those are the things that allowed them to really generate offense throughout the year. They've got to get better receivers, though, and they've got to protect them a little bit better.
So who are those receivers going to be? Because as you said, you're concerned about that. Who can step up and be? You know, it's crazy when you look at the SEC stats all time that Vanderbilt has the 2 all-time leading receivers in the history of this conference. They've had great receivers in the past. Who can step up and be that person for the Commodores this year?
Well, first of all, I think you got to look at Junior Sherrill. Caught the big touchdown against Alabama last year. He's a local kid, really fast, a pretty good route runner. And then beyond that, you're looking at it and you're saying, wow, I don't know where they're going to get production from. They got Chance Fitzgerald from Virginia Tech. He's really physically gifted, but overall didn't make a huge splash in spring ball. Joseph McVay was out for a good portion of spring ball. He's a guy who I think they're betting on having a high ceiling, but really has only made splash plays throughout his tenure at Vanderbilt. Really hasn't done the fundamental things incredibly well. They've got a couple sophomore receivers who I think are undersized, but have some ability. And then, man, they've got some freshmen that are coming in and could maybe do some things. The one that I look at who has a rapport with Diego Pavia that's coming in the summer is Trent Hudson. And man, they are putting all their eggs in the Trent Hudson basket at this point. I think they're going to try to get another receiver or two in the spring portal window, but Trent Hudson is a big-bodied red zone threat, and man, they are going to need him to step up. I think the answer more than any other receiver is you're looking at Eli Stowers to do similar things to what he did last year. And then you're maybe looking at Cole Spence, who's mainly been used as more of a blocking tight end, to maybe expand his receiving role a tiny bit. I don't think he's going to get anywhere near Stowers, but I actually think he's one of their more talented pass catchers, which is kind of weird to say for a guy who's primarily been used as a blocking tight end. Maybe they use him a little bit more, but man, they're going to have some work to do in the spring portal window at receiver for sure if this holds.
I was going to mention Stowers, who maybe my preseason all-SEC tight end, just a really talented guy. Trent Hudson's a name that's going to be familiar to some Mississippi State fans, obviously coming to Vanderbilt from Starkville. Did not make much of an impact here. We'll see if he can do it up in Nashville. What about defensively? You know, Clark Lee is a defensive head coach by trade. Defensively last year, Vanderbilt was, I would say they had some really good moments, but they also had some moments where they just couldn't get stops. Maybe inconsistent is the right word. I think this is a defense, though, that could take a big step forward this year. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. I think this is one of the best defenses, if not the best defense that Clark Lee has constructed. I think first of all, they have the high-end playmakers. They have Brandon Fontenot, right? Martell Hyde, I think, has a chance to be one of the better corners in the league. And I think the thing to watch with their corners is, can they play more man coverage? They played 88% zone last year, and I think that hurt them in terms of being able to really put their foot down and stop people. But I do think they're better at corner this year. At least they have more depth there. They have two guys coming off of major health issues. Obviously, Marlon Jones, the corner, the FCS corner, had cancer and beat it. So congratulations to Marlon Jones. That's incredible. And then Mark Davis was another FCS transfer that tore his Achilles, and Vanderbilt's really going to have to see if either of them can give them anything. But I think both are very gifted. Martell Hyde, obviously gifted as well. Jalen Lackey, they're betting on to take a step at corner. So I think their secondary could definitely be improved. Also, CJ Hurd, a transfer from FAU, can really come down in the box and hit. So I think that's the area where I look at them being really improved. I think their linebacker depth is good. Jamison Curtis is a second or third team linebacker that's made a leap. Their pass rush, I still think, leaves a little bit to be desired. I think they have some good space eaters there. But I think Cordae Sidner and Zaylen Wood are still their probably two most gifted pass rushers. And I don't know that that's exactly the position they wanted to be in at this point. Easton Wataha, I think, could take a leap there as well. But overall, I think the defensive line has got to show me some things. We know they're good. We know they're deep. But do they have a real standout playmaker? I'm not sure. On the back end, though, I think they've got potential to really have high-end ability.
We're going to learn all about this Vanderbilt team pretty early in the season. Trips, you know, week two, they go to Virginia Tech, who's going to obviously going to be looking to get a little bit of revenge after what happened in Nashville last year. And then week three at South Carolina, a team that a lot of people are going to say could be in the playoff discussion this year. What's our best and worst case scenarios for those first three games of the season? I'll just go ahead and chalk up Charleston Southern as a win for the Commodores. Can they be 3-0 in that? What happens if they're 2-1? What if they're 1-2?
Well, South Carolina has never been a game that Vanderbilt has seemed to win, regardless of how good South Carolina is. Vanderbilt just, for some reason, can never get over that hump, so I would guess that's a loss. And going to Virginia Tech week one, I think, is going to be difficult. I haven't followed up to see if that's a night game or not, but if it is, I mean, that's going to be...
It says TBD here, so we'll have to wait.
Going to be more difficult if it's a night game as well. I think they're capable of winning their first two games. South Carolina, though, I wouldn't bet on them winning. I don't, even if they're 1-2, I don't think that necessarily reflects the type of team they are, because I think they are better than they were last year in a lot of ways. Obviously, we've talked about got to improve a receiver. I think they probably need another edge rusher too. They've added some depth on the D-line through the portal, but I don't think any huge game changers. So I don't think a 1-2 start signals disaster. If they're 3-0, obviously that means they've really got something. If they go and beat South Carolina, like you said, maybe a playoff team, but man, I do think that there's a real shot they go 2-1 there, and a non-zero chance they go 3-0, which I think is completely foreign territory for this Vanderbilt program.
So I'll ask you the last question here, and this is the same question I've asked everybody I've done these interviews with. The last game of the season for Vanderbilt is November 29th. Obviously, they'll take on Tennessee in Knoxville. After that game, what are we saying about this Vanderbilt team?
I think in a lot of ways, you're looking at it and you're saying they were improved, but I think what we're still yet to figure out is how much does that reflect in the record? Because I think they've had better teams in the past that really haven't performed. I think 2 years ago, you look at 2023, and that was one of their more talented rosters that they've had, and they won two games with it. So can Clark Lee maximize this team? Can Tim Beck's offense kind of evolve relative to what it was last year? It got figured out over the course of the second half of the season. So I think there's a lot of unknown as to how many games they actually win. What I do think is that they're more talented, and I think that's really all we know at this point. How do they match up with these teams? I'm not sure. How does Tim Beck's offense evolve? Does Clark Lee have enough in the front seven defensively? How does Steve Gregory transition into being the primary defensive play caller? I think there is a lot of unknown, which is weird to say about a program that returns so much production and return so much experience, but I think you're still looking at it, and there's a lot to be determined in fall camp, but even more so that we'll learn, like you said, in the first 3 weeks.
We'll find out. Vanderbilt, great story last season. We'll see if they can follow up with another good season this year. Joey Dwyer, Vandy 24/7, man, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So here's the question I asked him. Is Diego Pavia the most popular college football player right now? Is he the guy that everybody in the country is like, I love that guy?
Maybe that.
Yeah, I don't think he's the best. I'm not saying he's the best, but most
Arch might be the most popular.
Well, maybe. You say that, but Texas A&M fans hate Arch. Oklahoma,
yeah,
fans,
but you know, a lot of people hate Diego Pavia too. He's kind of a Ooh. He's got that he's got Ooh. That he's got that aura about him. Somebody hates him.
Anybody who hates Diego Pavia can't be a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I love Diego Pavia. I love the attitude. The guy is the quarterback of Vanderbilt, and he walks around like he's the quarterback of Alabama. I love that. I love every bit of it. And he backed it up last year. He won a lot of games that Vandy probably has no business winning, and I'm interested to see what the Commodores can do again this year. 15 interviews we did this spring. Thanks to everybody who participated. We had some great new people here on the podcast, people we've never had before. We look forward to having those guys on again. Tomorrow's pod, preview Super Bulldog weekend, Mississippi State and Kentucky. Get some thoughts on that. Plus, you know, who knows what's going to happen between now and then. Robbie could buy something else. His company, you know, could purchase.
Well, I'm not buying anything.
Tomorrow on 3 is purchase Super Talk, and then I don't know where we're going from there. We'll see. Talk to you guys tomorrow. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk, Mississippi.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.